Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for Tuesday, July 10th, 2018. And this is officially episode number 359. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And thank you for allowing me to enter your ears and touch your mind. I'm here turning on the lights in the darkness of the unknown and allowing you to see the truth. I know that's a lot. Sounds gimmicky, but anyway, this week's news includes an update on the Paranormal News Insider coming back live. And that's going to actually be next week, July 17th. So stay tuned for details on that. Also going to have an update on the Montana Monster, the latest on the Loch Ness Monster, plus MUFON sighting statistics for the month of May. I know, May, it's July. But trust me, this will all pan out next week. And we'll also have a quick recap of the first half of 2018. Yeah, it's more than halfway over already with it being July. And usually I do a little bit of a recap in June, but we're going to touch on a couple of the biggest stories so far this year. Some anomalous notes, basically dealing with me and the show here. The last full Paranormal News Insider show was back on April 17th of this year. That was the last one that was, you know, an hour long. And on April 20th, just 3 days later, the network that I was broadcasting on, WCJV Digital Broadcasting, where it was last 2 years, well, they decided to immediately cease operations. So the show kind of was hanging out there in the balance for a little while. And I really honestly wasn't sure what I was going to do with the show, if I was going to change the show into something new or continue to do it or scrap it and do something different or just hang up the mic for good. But I'm happy to say that the bug to get behind the mic, as well as to get behind all these stories, to continue to read these stories, disseminate what's going on, and be an active part of the paranormal. And I guess I could do that without a radio show, but it forces me to get to the heart of the matter each and every week so I can bring it to you and dig out the truth so you can hear it for yourself. Not that you can't figure it out on your own, but it's nice to just sit back and let somebody else do the work for you. And I can tell you what's really going on out there, and hopefully you trust me, because I do my homework and I do my research the best that I can to bring you the best information possible about all of these stories, and essentially from the inside, based on my knowledge, experience, and background. And so anyway, long story short, I know, too late. May 27th, I did another episode basically to publicly explain what was going on. And I had quite a few people had emailed me, instant messaged me, and asked me, hey, what's going on? I'm not getting any more live updates on this show. I'm not getting any on Podbean or, I don't know, all the dozens of other places, iHeart, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, you name it. Hopefully this show is on it. And a lot of people have their favorite one that they like to listen to, and that's why I try to get it out to as many as possible. You know, it's weird when I hear shows only do one method or maybe two, but I'm telling you, everybody has their own unique place they like to listen to podcasts and radio shows and whatnot, and I do like to do a live show. That way, the pressure's on. The pressure's on me to bring you that content continuously in a fashion that's updated specifically. You know when the show is going to be on. You know when all this information is going to roll out. And that's how I like to do it. I like to do it live. Plus, live radio is unforgiving. It's fun and it's exciting, and things do go wrong. And it keeps the pressure on me as a broadcaster, because then I have to be at my best. And right now I'm recording this, so I don't know, probably not as good as what I would be if I was live, but hopefully through practice and whatnot, it sounds okay. But anyway, Yeah, May 27th, did another episode basically to publicly explain what was going on. And now, yes, happy to announce, happy to say that the show will be returning to its same night and same time. So every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, but on a new network. I figured it's just too much for me to do it on my own. I did the May 27th episode, produced that myself, and producing this one myself. But it's, hate to say it, it is far easier to allow somebody else to tinker with everything and to put out that content. It's just another extra, oh, I don't know, maybe half hour, 45 minutes, depends on how much I got to cut and add things. Now, sometimes it doesn't take that long to produce these things. And I produced every single episode of the show up until I went on WCJV. So I'm a little spoiled. I think it was 127 episodes I did on that network. So a little spoiled with having somebody else do that production work. But it's nice, really, it is, to allow somebody else to do take part of your work away from you, so you can focus on everything. And some of my stuff, yeah, I'm working on like way too many projects, so I'll probably not going to have anything out this year, hopefully soon. A couple of books in the works. Granted, I have a million other projects I should be working on. And my latest book, which was Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, is available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and hopefully a lot of other places. You can also buy it through my website, briandparsons.com. It's connected to Lulu, who is the publisher of the book and all of my books thus far. Hopefully that'll change in the future. And you can read all about how to investigate, how to research UFOs. And there's also a similar book in there about cryptozoology. And then, of course, I have four other books. Those are all on ghosts and ghost research, including my E4 method. So, yeah, that's a shameless plug right there for my own stuff. But why not? It's my show, right? And speaking of me and my show, what else am I doing? Well, as you know, this show does like to chronicle the paranormal conferences and conventions that are happening primarily in the United States, or I should say North America. Not really done any for Mexico, but Canada, United States, I try to focus on those two areas. Primarily, that's the audience I'm getting. And if I get enough pressure maybe down the road, I'd like to do some European stuff as well and continue to grow the show. Maybe that'll happen. And I try to keep it updated as much as possible. Just updated a couple of days ago to cross off some ones that had just taken place. And as well, I think I added three or maybe four, and there's a couple that were canceled. I will be appearing at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. That's going to be at the end of July. Looking for those dates, July 27th through the 29th. Now, I'm not speaking. I spoke last year. That's where my latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, I'm sorry, researcher. No, I was right, investigator. So anyway, don't even know my own book. That's where that book debuted. And very, very excited to have been able to debut it at that location. Basically, the one of the biggest events on the East Coast for UFOs outside of any of the MUFON events. And it's kind of I don't know, it's kind of a big deal. It was a lot of fun. Just all sorts of carnival riots, carnival food, you name it. It was exciting. Tractor pulls, kids rides, you name it. And it was so much fun. I think I've gone last few years, but it's essentially the Roswell of the East. So it's a big deal in UFO research and UFO folklore. So being able to finally get up there and speak about the basics of UFOs was a thrilling moment for me. It was actually only one of a small handful of times I've actually spoken about UFOs publicly. Usually I do cryptozoology and ghost stuff, but yeah, not speaking this year, but I'll be there with books in tow and talking to Stan Gordon and hopefully a lot of other people that are going to be there that I'll know. And hopefully there's also some people that I don't know. And that's the beautiful thing about these conferences and conventions, meeting new people with new ideas, new information. And if you're a researcher or investigator, that's gold. You know, there's only so much you can get through social media. I'm telling you, yes, you can talk to anybody at any point in time, but to meet somebody face to face, be able to talk things through with them, it's a far different thing. So I highly recommend you getting out there and checking out this list. Now, one big thing I do want to mention, August 17th and the 18th, I was supposed to be presenting at the third annual Summer's End Squatch Watch in Tyonesta, Pennsylvania. Well, that event has been canceled. Got that information from Dave Dragason just a few days ago. So that event is no longer going to be on. Big disappointment. I was really looking forward to that. It was some blend of Native American culture, in addition to obviously this Bigfoot thing. So that would have been a lot of fun. And I love that area of Pennsylvania. I'm actually gonna, yeah, I'm gonna go kayaking, I think, up there. Maybe not that area, but anyway. October 5th and 6th, I'll be at the UnCon 12, and UnCon stands for unconventional. What an unconventional name. I love it. And that's going to be taking place in Piqua, Ohio. And I'll be talking about cryptozoology as part of the theme of the unconventional 12, and that is Alien Freak Show. Yes, I'll be weaving cryptozoology into an Alien Freak Show. It's going to be fun. I can't wait for that one. Just something off the wall like that. There is no expectations. You don't have to do anything one way or another. It's not intense talking about Bigfoot or intense talking about ghosts or anything else. It's whatever. And I can't wait for that. Also be at the Al Batwitch Festival in Columbia, Pennsylvania. That's on October 13th. I will be presenting there. Be speaking, I should say. October 30th. I'll be speaking at the Westerville Public Library in Westerville, Ohio, which is northeast of Columbus, on the subject of Ohio cryptids and strange creatures. And that's going to be my 10th consecutive year at the library. And I'm also pleased to announce that the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure will be back next year. Host Eric Altman took the year off, and it's well deserved. I mean, the last 2 years, just an incredible event, both years. I mean, very similar, but I'll tell you what, they were very unique, very different for a lot of different things that happened and the experiences that I personally had. And I'll tell you what, I've been to a lot of conferences, a lot of conventions, I've been to a lot of cryptozoology stuff. Nothing tops this event. And I'll tell you what, there is one thing that's going to top the last 2 years of this Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It's going to be next year's Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Again, May 31st through June 2nd of 2019. And tickets will go on sale on September 1st of this year, which is my birthday, by the way. So buy me a birthday present and buy yourself a Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure ticket for you and your family. That's the birthday present for me, by the way. You don't have to buy me anything extra. Looking forward to that. Yeah, well, I guess it's less than a year. It's like 11 months away. And I've already have another event lined up before that one. May 3rd and 4th, I'll be appearing at the Haunted Heights Paracon 2019 in Houghton Lake, Michigan. I guess that's enough of selfless promotion. Let's jump into some news. Now, I'm obviously not going to connect all the dots back all the way from May 27th, but there are a few stories that have kind of evolved since that time, and that's the kind of stuff that I want to talk about. Now, come towards the end of the year when I do the wrap up, when I do the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018, there might be a couple that I missed during this time that I will bring out, and maybe some of these stories I will be talking about toward the wrap-up time of the year, but I want to keep it short and simple this week on this, I guess, pre-live show coming up next week. Now, May 27th, I did talk about the strange-looking creature that was lying in the back of a pickup truck, and that should be enough of a mental visual for a lot of you. Probably remember this story. You might not know that it was finally figured out what this thing was. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves about paranormal stories, is that yeah, the headline makes a big splash and everybody hears about it, everybody talks about it, everybody passes it around on social media, but when the solution comes, it's like hush hush. It's you really have to search for this information sometimes. Now, a rancher near Denton, Montana, shot and killed what he thought was a wolf that was near his livestock back on May 16th. He called authorities, which is required by law, but when Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks arrived, they felt that something wasn't quite right. Now, this statement was put out in stories on the internet and rumors speculating that this might be anything from a werewolf to a Bigfoot, a dogman, or maybe something else, quickly made this one of the bigger cryptid stories of the year. Authorities are fairly convinced that this was not a pure wolf and released a statement that outlined some of the observations, including that the canine teeth were too short, some of the actually the front paws were too small, and the claws on the front paw were too long. So some of this observations of this creature just didn't match what would have been expected of it. And that caused a lot of speculation. Well, it can't be a wolf because this and this and this. So it's got to be a dogman. Well, not necessarily. Now, the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks sent the carcass to the department's lab in Bozeman, where tissue samples were collected. These samples were then shipped to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service laboratory in Ashland, Oregon, where they were tested. And yes, in case you haven't heard, the test results came back. The Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks official government website released an official statement back on Monday, June 18th, and their conclusion, the animal in question was nothing more spectacular than a plain old gray wolf. Yes, it was just a gray wolf. The DNA tests were conclusive, and they pointed out the physical variations caused immediate identification issues in the field, but the lab in Bozeman researchers were fairly certain this was just a slight oddity of dimensions within the population. So this is actually kind of normal. If perhaps you are still not convinced, which it seems quite a few people are actually dismissive of these findings, saying that this was a lie, it's a cover-up, it's not real. Okay, well, the full genetics examination report is available from the Montana FWP website, and I'll be getting that out obviously, in the next couple of days, between now and well, July 17th. So you can take a look at this yourself and you could read through this. The National Fish and Wildlife Forensic Laboratory in Ashland, Oregon, concluded that the mitochondrial DNA did, in fact, match that of samples on file and determined through the samples that this was a female gray wolf from the northern Rocky Mountains. The possibility of coyote or domestic dog mix was completely ruled out by the three samples obtained. And again, there's a PDF file that I'll be putting out along with the actual, well, yeah, I don't see it. Oh, there it is. So I'll have the Montana Fish and Wildlife, basically the page that they had the announcement on. And at the bottom of that, I see there is the PDF file. So you can find it yourself, but I'll still put it out there as a separate post. Some people like that, so I like to make it simple. And with cryptozoology, there's another big story that's still underway, and that is the search for the Loch Ness Monster. Well, the scientific search for the Loch Ness Monster, that is. This story has been in the news actually since last year. Although you might not remember it, I was covering this story last year, and now it's slowly becoming one of the biggest stories of the year. Sounds familiar? Well, the conclusion to this story will take a little while, a lot longer than our Montana monster, more than likely into 2019. And yeah, that's science. Sometimes it takes time. And that's really and truly because of the extent of this particular individual experiment, which includes 259 water samples. And these were taken back in June and were taken at various depths down to 660 feet. And that's up and down Loch Ness. These samples were then extracted at the University of Hull, where they will then be sent to the Alpine Ecology Laboratory in Grenoble, France, for metabarcoding and then sequencing. Now, I'm not going to explain that because I really don't understand everything, but they're going to basically just break down the samples that they have, any living tissue, find any kind of DNA associated with it, and then basically, just like the story I talked about from Montana, they're going to match it up to known samples. So it takes a little longer than three little samples, knowing full well it's already a canine. Now we're talking about plants, animals, and all sorts of things, you know, that running the gamut from types of fish to potentially shrimp to fish and everything in between. It's so much that's in the lock, swimming around, ducks and you name it, seals, deer. Yes, there's actually deer swim through there quite a bit to go from side to side. So we'll see. We'll just have to wait. There's going to be a lot of crunching of information. And again, the full results are not expected until early next year. And there's another story floating around about Loch Ness, and I'll cover that one next week. Just kind of catching you guys up on some of the stuff that's been happening last few weeks. And before I let things get too far away, I'm going to cover the MUFON, or Mutual UFO Network, sighting statistics for May. Yeah, because I know that's a couple of months ago, but next week I'll be catching you up on the ones from June, so we'll be all caught up. So in the May 27th episode, I did reveal the Mutual UFO Network sighting statistics for the month of April. And if you go back to March, there were 640 total worldwide sightings, with 446 reported in the United States. For the month of April, MUFON reported 546 worldwide reports, with 363 coming from the United States. Now, these numbers are very close to the February numbers from this year, which were 548 total and 362 U.S. sightings. Now, I have the numbers for May, which I should have shared last month, but obviously I didn't have a show, so that's why I'm a little behind. I took a month off. What can you say? Maybe I needed it. Now my predictions for May. Yes, I do predictions. Each month I predict what I think the next month is going to be. And I predicted 611 total worldwide sightings and 385 right here in the United States. Well, MUFON reported 678 total sightings and 446 sightings in the United States. So, yeah, I was a little off the mark. It's weird. It seems like I'm way over or way under. But I'll tell you what, it's still fun to speculate either way. It's really, these numbers really don't mean anything in the bigger scheme of things. There's not really a whole lot that you can really draw from it, but it's good information, and it's just a different way to talk about UFO sightings and to talk about the information that's gathered by MUFON. So of the 678 total sightings for May, again, 446 were reported here in the United States. Canada was number two on that list of countries with 68. Yes, quite a drop-off from 446. Then the United Kingdom, they turned in 58. And then another sharp drop-off as Australia turned in 14. Germany had 13. France had 12. And India, well, they had 5. A whopping 5 for India. Thanks, though. Appreciate that. 37 more countries turned in 4 or less reports, with 24 of them only turning in one report each. And again, that's not their fault. You know, MUFON is based here in the United States, and a lot of other countries, well, they have their own reporting networks. They have their own methods of collection and dissemination of data. And MUFON maybe isn't that entrenched in India. So, you know, it's not the country's fault. It's MUFON just doesn't have that reach. Would be nice to be able to collect all of the worldwide sightings from all the different networks into one thing, but that'll probably never happen. So 37 more countries turned in four or less reports, with 24 of them only turning in one report each. of the U.S. states and the 446 reports, California was number one, as expected. Well, it's expected since they topped the population rank of the United States. They're number one in population, so they should be number one in UFO reports. I know it's boggles the mind, but it's just basic math, basic statistics. California, well, they turned in 52 reports. Texas was next with 39. Florida had 26. Arizona and New York had 24 each. Colorado had 22. Michigan, 19. Washington had 18. Ohio had 16. Pennsylvania had 14. Oregon, 13. And Illinois and North Carolina, well, they had 12 each. Alabama, Georgia, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, they turned in nine reports each. And there was 31 more states that turned in eight or less reports, including the District of Columbia. And as I always say, once again, no, there was not a UFO that landed on the White House lawn. Maybe I kind of wish one would. But anyway, keep the political drama off the show. But let's look at May and the, well, the, we'll break it down. And I like to do a per capita breakdown. And I always say as well that MUFON used to do this. For whatever reason, they no longer do this. But I think it's kind of important because it gives you, yes, this information is somewhat meaningless because of the way this data is collected and the way it's presented. Some of these sightings, yes, we're talking about the month of May, but some of these collections of sightings might not have happened not only in the month of May, but they might have happened in another year. So it's not accurate. Plus, you'll have sightings at the beginning of May that might have happened at the end of April. Maybe one happened in March and somebody just didn't get around to reporting it until May. And you're going to have a bunch in May that aren't reported till months later. And the way MUFON's case management system works, it's basically whenever it's reported in that time frame, that's when it shows up in the sighting statistics. And that's fine and dandy. Because it does give us information to talk about here on this show at least. And MUFON does send out an email with all that information out to everybody, so we can all check it out and kind of look at that information for ourselves. And essentially a per capita breakdown. So that's sightings per 100,000 people. So in this case, obviously, with some of these states having millions of people in them, we don't have millions of sightings or even hundreds of thousands of sightings. So it's going to be based on a percentage, or basically a fraction. So I look at it as so the United States, we had the total sighting reports for the month of month of May, 446 here in the US. So that would break down to a 0.14. 0.14. So that would be like, I don't know, somebody's right arm. So it's, point, it's like 14% of one person per 100,000. I guess that's the easiest way to break that down. So California, yes, they're number one state in population. Well, they had a 0.132. So a 0.132, obviously a little less than a 0.14, right? Nod your heads. Yes. Okay. So a little less. So actually, California, even though they had 52 sightings and they beat everybody, it's actually lower than what it should have been for that state. So that's why I kind of like to look at the per capita breakdown. It tells you whether or not a state is significant. So if a state is significant, then I can go into the case management system and look at that state and look at those sightings to see if there's anything important in there. And usually it's not. or I'd be reporting it. But it's still it's useful. It's information. It's interesting stuff. But again, it's just percentages. It's just statistics, and sometimes statistics don't really paint an accurate picture of anything worthwhile. It just gives you a breakdown of the data, breakdown of the information that we're talking about here. So Texas, number two in population, they had 39 sightings. They actually had a 0.14 per capita breakdown, so they were actually even. 0.14 with 39 sightings. California, 52, and they were less than 0.14. So you kind of see how this stuff works. So now we have Florida. Florida is number three in population. They had 26 sightings in the month of May. They finished with a 0.126 per capita. So obviously, well below the 0.14. So insignificant. Then we go to Arizona. Arizona is number 14 in state population. They had 24 sightings, so they had less than Florida. But their per capita for Arizona is 0.346. That's huge. That's well more than double the U.S. average there. So something sneaky going on down there in Arizona. So I'll have to dig into that information and try to see if I can find anything there. Then we move to Colorado. Colorado, number 21 in state population of the United States. They had 22 sightings and turned in a whopping 0.397. 0.397. that is pretty big. That's the biggest I've had since back in January with a 0.432 in New Mexico, but they only had nine sightings. Then we have Washington. Washington State, they're 13th in population. They had 18 sightings for a 0.247. Oregon, I don't know. I'm still up in the air about that. They're at number 27 in population. They had 13 sightings and finished with a 0.317 per capita. Alabama, number 24 in state population, nine sightings. The 0.185. Good job, Alabama. You finished ahead of the average. We get to Nevada. They're 34th in state population. They had eight sightings for a 0.272. Pretty good. Pretty good. Almost double. New Mexico, 36th in state population. They had a 0.336 per capita, and that's with seven sightings. Hawaii, 40th in state population. They had a 0.42. Wow. 0.42. They're the high winner of the month. But they only had six sightings. So I don't know. Wyoming, 50th, dead last in state population. That's not counting Puerto Rico and some of the outlying islands and stuff like that. 50th in state population. They had a 0.341 right there in the mix. But it was only two sightings. Yikes. So I'm gonna have to go with Arizona as the winner of the month of May. Yeah, they were third actually in the percentage of per capita with 0.346 behind Colorado and way behind Hawaii, but they had 24 sightings. Two more than Colorado, and much higher in population, 14th versus 21 for Colorado. So I'm giving them the nod for the month of May. And again, next week, July 17th, I'll reveal the UFO sighting statistics for June, and we'll be all caught up. Now, since I've already seen them, I already know the numbers, so I can't give you a prediction. However, I'll throw it out here 2 months early. Well, it's actually not 2 months. It's about already a week into July. So about 3 weeks early until hopefully I get the results of the July sighting statistics. I'll tell you my prediction. I'm predicting 589 total worldwide sightings with 377 happening in the United States. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton for this month's MUFON sighting statistics. And let's see, other news. I got nothing. I got nothing. That's it. Have a nice week. No, that's not how we do this. Got a real quick mid-year recap. It's been a boring year. That's my recap. Actually, no, it's not been a boring year. A lot of stuff has happened this year. And taking a month and a half off, about 2 months off. There for a while, I kind of wasn't really watching too hard on some of these stories, but I was posting some stories on the Paranormal News Insider, but really the biggest stuff had already happened. And we can go all the way back to January. January 16th, one of the most viral stories of the year. Well, maybe number two viral story. Meteor Madness in Michigan. That's my name for it. That's what I'm sticking to. Meteor Madness in Michigan. Yes, Tuesday, January 16th, a large meteor lit up the skies over Michigan and was seen in many surrounding states. It exploded in the air with the power of 10 tons of TNT. That's according to Bill Cook of NASA's Meteoroid Environment Office. And that was what the Associated Press reported. Now, that's all well and good. We have these all the time. We have, we had a big one over the Northeast, but 2 weeks prior to that. It made some news, but people weren't really talking about it. It wasn't really that big of a deal. Outside of those of us that really pay attention to that, I always follow what's going on in the skies. I always know what's going on. So it's kind of big for me. I thought it was cool, but yeah, outside of just a brief mention in the news, nobody knew about it. So what made this one madness? Well, photos of a fire in Taylor, Michigan, of a garage. These were put online right around the same time that people were reporting, seeing this flash in the sky. People were wondering what happened. Was it some crashing Russian rocket? Was it some UFO crashing down somewhere? What was going on in the skies over the United States, over the Midwest? Was this related? Was this fire, this garage fire in Taylor, Michigan, was this result of something crashing, a UFO, or maybe even, geez, maybe a meteor? Yeah, well, the meteor was confirmed pretty quickly after the numerous sightings were starting to pour in. So it was confirmed, and this fire then became what a lot of people thought was related to this meteor crashing, but it was completely unrelated. But social media, well, it says otherwise, and people were spreading this faster than the flames from a burning car in a garage. But that's the way things go. So that was a really big, story. It's pretty viral back in January. Yeah, I know you probably don't remember it, but trust me, it was pretty big. Now, the month of April, we had a pretty big story. And weird enough as it is, this was the last show I did on WCJV, and it was like it could have been the last show I ever did. And it was a tough show. It was I wasn't really attached to this person, but seeing the impact of the passing of somebody in the paranormal, I've never seen anyone pass that's affected this field as much as Art Bell back on Friday, April 13th. It was a pretty sad day in the paranormal, and a lot of other people outside of the paranormal were reaching out through Twitter and other means to express their gratitude for Art Bell and their sorrow of his passing as well. And yes, Bell was obviously famous for creating the Coast to Coast radio show that many people in the paranormal have listened to or maybe even grown up with. I know I listened to it, and I'll tell you, doesn't matter who's hosting that show, it was never as good as when Art Bell was on there. And it's just no offense to anybody that's ever hosted that show, but I mean, Art Bell was just Art Bell. That was just it. He made that show. And I agree to disagree. I don't know. Maybe it was just because that's when I really was into it and kind of got out of it after he left the first time, second time, third time, I forget. But the show has evolved. It's changed over time as well, and it's really not something that attracts my ears all that much. There's so much other stuff going on that I don't really get a chance to listen to as well anyway, with as far as paranormal shows. So Coast to Coast, it takes a back seat. Sometimes I know people that are on there, so I'll listen to an episode, but it's usually recorded. So yes, the passing of Art Bell, he's been a big influence to a lot of people, from conspiracy theorists to, yes, radio show hosts. A lot of people were really heard about this. This is radio show hosts. A lot of people looked up to Art Bell as a major influence, and it really impacted the community quite a bit. And I would have to say, in my opinion, probably the largest cultural influence, essentially, of the spread of belief of paranormal phenomenon since the Fox sisters. I mean, I'll say it. The 1800s, the Fox sisters. I mean, you could say what you want about the TV shows are wonderful, and Ghost Hunters in 2004 really got a lot of people into the paranormal, but Art Bell, just the vast number of people that became kind of affected by paranormal phenomena that maybe were completely from the outside and just had an interest in this and a belief. I think he's affected way more people than any plumber could ever do. And the third biggest story of the year, I'd have to say, is the Montana creature, which I talked about and pretty much wrapped up in this episode. So we're not going to go into detail on that. You will hear me next week as long as I have a voice. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Never give up the chase, and above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.